Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 3, Text 24 and 25. This chapter is entitled Talks Between Lord Shiva and Satyam.
Yadhi vajishyasya thayamalvacho madhram bhavayatjana tato bhavishyati. Sambhavitasya sa janat parabhavo yara sa sadhyo maranaya kalpate. Yadi, if Vajishyasi, you will go atihaya, neglecting matvachaha, my words, bhadram, good, bhavatyaha, your, na, not, tata, then, bhavishyati, will become sambhavitasya, most respectable, svajanat, by your own relative, parabhavaha, are insulted yada when saha that insult sadhya immediately maranaya in to death kalpate is equal. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In spite of this instruction, if you decide to go neglecting my words, the future will not be good for you. You are most respectable, and when you are insulted by your relative, this insult will immediately be equal to death. This is the Dasenza Bhaktivedanta purpose of the fourth canto, third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Talks Between Lord Shiva and Sati. We'll read 24 or so. 24 of this short purport. Tate nirikshikona. Translation, therefore, you should not see your father, although he is the giver of your body, because he and his followers are envious of me. Because of this envy, most worshipful one, he has insulted me with cruel words, although I am innocent. Purport by Swamigosi C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. For a woman, both the husband and the father are equally worshipable. The husband is a protector of a woman during her youthful life, whereas the father is a protector during her childhood. Thus both are worshipable, but especially the father, because he is the giver of the body. Lord Shiva reminded Sati, your father is undoubtedly worshipable, even more than I am. But take care, for although he is the giver of your body, he may also be the taker of your body. Because when you see your father, because of your association with me, he may insult you. An insult from a relative is worse than death, especially when one is well situated. Translation again, therefore you should not see your father, although he is the giver of your body, because he and his followers are envious of me. Because of this envy, most worshipful one, he has insulted me with cruel words, although I am innocent. In spite of this instruction, if you decide to go, neglecting my words, the future will not be good for you. You are most respectable, and when you are insulted by your relative, this insult will immediately be equal to death. Then we will hear in the next chapter how this becomes, Shiva's words become true, practically. Sati quits her body is the next chapter. So Lord Shiva is pointing out, giving us examples of the precarious position in the material world. Padam padam yad vipadam, every step is dangerous in the material world. What is proper action? What is proper deeds? What is proper mentality? Is very difficult to understand. Very difficult. There seems to be a lot of contradiction in the scriptures also, because of different scriptures for different types of persons. So they're obviously in the primarily for the mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. The Puranas are divided into six sections each. So sometimes there seems there'll be contradictions. So if you compare one to the other. But when seen, when taken in the proper context, what the audience they're aiming for, they're speaking for, then we can see there's no actual contradiction. And it has been ascertained by the acharyas, as well as the author of the Vedas himself, Vyasadeva, that those Puranas in the mode of goodness, they're the best, relatively speaking, of all the three sections. The ones in the mode of goodness are the better, the giver, because their explanations, the message that they are given will be more sustainable, more useful for a civilized human being regarding the progressive values of life, because they're aiming to actually bring one. Mode of goodness means you're pure as you can be in the material world, and from that position, it's a little easier transmission into the transcendence. A little easier. It's not a prerequisite to come to the mode of goodness necessarily before you can come to transcendence. You can take to devotional service at any stage of life. One simply has to be willing to do it. One simply has to agree to do it, to accept the process of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as all in all, and apply that process. Then immediately one is transcendentally situated, at least by activity. Consciousness may not be fully there, but at least the activity is transcendental. So you can immediately take to that from any walk of life, because there's some philosophers that say that first one has to come to the mode of goodness before you can actually do it. But, and also, I should probably mention sometimes also like that. But in other times, according to the circumstance, according to the circumstance that he's speaking about, he will say different things sometimes. Even the acharyas, they say different things, which are to applied in different circumstances. One has to consider time, place, and circumstance. So therefore, these Puranas, they're giving so many instances of people that get into trouble. I mean, everyone's in trouble in the material world, period. Everyone's endeavoring for a better, trying to improve their situation. Really, nothing else is going on. You look at your own life, even right now, we're always striving for a better situation, right? As soon as the sun comes up, we put the fan on, we go inside. You're always trying to get a more comfortable situation. This material world, material energy is very aggressive for the pure soul. Soul is by nature Sachidananda. Soul doesn't suffer. The soul doesn't grow old. As we heard in the Bhagavad Gita, the soul doesn't go through these tribulations of thirst, hunger, heat, cold, lamentation, distress. All these things, they're unnatural to the soul. They're alien to the soul. We never experience them in the spiritual world. But here, because we're under the, we experience them through the medium of this material body and mind. So that is called illusion. We're identifying very strongly with this vehicle that we're traveling in at the present moment, and the faculty that we're afforded. We're so much in contact and identification with it that this becomes the most important thing. It's the closest thing to us. So therefore it's very important, especially in this life. But the material energy is constantly bombarding the body, the senses and the mind with all these problems, real problems. Right? Soul is always aloof. Soul never mixes with matter. Krishna says the soul cannot be cut, dried, burned, withered. And in fact it can. But the mixing of the soul, the spirit and matter, that is called maya. We are projecting our consciousness onto matter through the medium of this body, through the medium of these eyes and the senses. We're identifying ourselves as part of it. First of all, we identify ourselves as a body. Then we identify ourselves as a part of what is going on around us. And then we start to enact that role. We get an identity of ourselves. And then we start to act according to that identity and trying to achieve our whatever we value in life. The goals that we set according to our knowledge or conditioning or learning, whatever you say. We have a set of values and some goals to achieve. And that's life. That's whole of life. So it's struggle. It's a struggle to achieve what you want, to maintain what you've got. It's difficult. And it's actually a losing battle, right? The body is just a bag of suffering. Right? You're born, as soon as you're born, you're crying. Baby starts crying, screaming. And when you leave, it's painful. And in the interim, we're always trying to get a better, more comfortable position. Because we're doing it all day, every day, we think this is normal. So we don't question. Most people don't question why I'm suffering. Because they don't think it's suffering, because there's an alternative. Because my father, his father, his father, everyone's going to doing the same thing, right? Everyone has to go. Everyone has to do the same things every day throughout creation. Get up in the morning, have something to eat, go through the day to maintain and sustain your ideals. Huh? Then go to sleep at night, and then wake up and do it again in the morning. So nobody really questions why, how to put an end to this. So this is real intelligence. So it says then for the human being, one who starts to inquire about these things, then that person has finally achieved a very high status in the material creation. There's not many human beings, you see. Most of the entities are most of the living entities are in other forms of life. Human beings are the smallest species, smallest in number, a variety. So mostly the conditioned souls here, they don't even have this opportunity. So it's actually rare, but it's even more rare when one takes this opportunity in the human form of life seriously and begins to inquire, how can I put an end to these problems? First one has to recognize there's a problem. First we have to be told we're in trouble, right? Most of us didn't even realize before we came into Krishna consciousness that we're in trouble. Everyone thinks they're doing okay, at least. The good part of your life, you think everything's okay, not so bad. So we're someone worse off. I could be always be worse off. It's not so bad. And we carry on like that. It took me years. Even when I became a devotee, it took me took me about 15, 20 years before I kind of fell in when Prabhupada said this, you know, material world is a place of suffering. I never actually, initially believed it in my heart. I never thought life was so bad. I thought I was doing okay. But it took me years and years and years, and then only intellectually I actually understood that. That it's just a struggle to maintain, yeah, this body and to achieve your desires. It's a big struggle. For what? For what? And what is the result at the end? You lay down, huh? And you leave it all behind. All your values, all your goals, all your achievements, and your disappointments, it's all gone with the body. And just a residue carries you to the next body, the mind, intelligence, and the carries the soul to the next body, and that identity you had. There you start. There you can start a new chapter. To become successful, to become complete, to achieve all your desires. It doesn't happen. It doesn't never happen. We never find that person is completely satisfied, who's achieved all they want. we're hearing about those kind of persons, these Atmaramas, persons who are perfectly self-satisfied, self-realized. It means that Krishna says, for one who takes pleasure in the self, then there's no high happiness in that. Then he can become indifferent to the material world. But not until. You can't do it from the heart. You can do it from the mind, from the intelligence, you know, philosophically, just like we're practicing sadhana bhakti. Sadhana, it's rules, niyam. Do this, don't do that. That is our routine. We have faith that if we do this, we will achieve what we want, spiritual emancipation. But still, there's no... we have to push ourselves to do it, right? We're still acting on intelligence, on duty, by culture. We're following these things as a matter of course. But it's not that we always want to do them. And often we want to do other things which are against these principles. Right? Mind has its own ways, and it's a struggle to it's an endeavor to stay on the right track. As we know, we're practicing sadhana bhakti. It's an endeavor. So, and because we're acting only on intelligence and grace and good association, but it's not coming from the heart. It's not actually in the mind. It's from the intelligence. You see, we're acting. The mind is still wants to. The mind still remembers all the good times we had in life, and all the good things that we may have to sacrifice. All the things that we like to do, we had to sacrifice. The mind is always hankering. Hasn't forgotten that taste, you see. So, therefore, by good association, we can remain fixed. Huh? That association is that's where we got our good intelligence from. We're associating with Bhagavatam. We're associating with the devotees. So that is they are the saving grace. But here you see Lord Shiva. He's indifferent. He's Atmarama. He's indifferent to the material world. So he's not interested in these social events. This yajna is a material thing. Although it's supposed to be aimed at sacrifice, pleasing Vishnu, the idea is to get potency to populate for good progeny, for good human beings, for first class sinful human beings, first class prisoners. at all. But everyone, what you're dealing with in the material world is all the dropouts. Drop out from the spiritual world, fell down from the spiritual world. So this is what you're dealing with. So amongst those who are a little trained, they're considered first class people, and we follow their examples, first class prisoners, or was it? But that's all it is, except a few, you know, like, you know, those empowered by the Lord to, who are not forced to actually come into the material world. So Lord Shiva's in that category. He's Atmarama, he's perfectly satisfied. He goes to these functions because he's a leading devata, and it's expected that he will come to the functions, and so he goes, you know, along with Brahma and other great demigods. But Lord Shiva especially is really not so much into it for the whole social event and the prestige, and he doesn't have to go. Whereas the others, they want to go, it's something special for them. It's a happening. You've got to do something in life, right? So what will you do? What do you like to do? What do you like to do? How do you like to enjoy yourself? What really appeals to you? So this is a wonderful program. It's a completely religious program, spiritual program in one sense. And if anyone who's anyone will be there. It's not an ordinary event. It's the most pious event in the world at this particular time. There's no harm in attending a function like that. It's the best thing you could be doing in this world, probably, materially speaking. So she's saying, why can't we go? Why can't we go? She's not, Lord Shiva's completely satisfied under any condition. Whether he goes, whether he doesn't, he's satisfied. But that is not of that category of consciousness. Why can't we go? Everyone's going to be there. What's the harm in going? But Lord Shiva's, by his warning, and he's given some foresight, which proves to be true, that, no, your father is envious of me. So there's a, better not go. Just disturb the whole program. Let them carry on and do their nice function, let them do everything nicely. I'm not going anyway. But if you go, it may be even your father is worshipable. Even he's more worshipable than me, the acharyas are saying here. She was very humble. Even he's more worshipable than me. Of course he's not. Who's more worshipable than Lord Shiva? Vaishnava Nanda Parashambho. He's the greatest Vaishnava. There's no one more worshipable than Lord Shiva. But still he's speaking in the material terms. Daksha's a big man. He's been put in charge of this yagya by Lord Brahma himself, the secondary creator. He's been given the chief position of the Prajapatis. Big position. And he's very pious, very, very noble person, very religious person. Expert. Daksha means expert. So he says, materially speaking, go Shiva. Have a dude, right? Not very cultured, and doesn't dress properly, doesn't know how to behave properly, materially speaking. Who would want him at a respectable function like someone like that, with snakes around him and skulls and ashes from the crematorium? We wouldn't invite someone like that, would we? So materially speaking, he said, no, your father's more respectable than me, more worshipable than me. So on the material platform, that is. But of course, on the spirituality is the is the main concern of Srimad Bhagavatam and these Puranas. So therefore these leelas, these pastimes are arranged like that to give us the proper conclusions, to give us the proper advice. Sati didn't listen to the good intelligence from Lord Shiva. She just couldn't do it. That will be explained in the next verses. She just couldn't do it. She wanted to, but she just couldn't do it. She had to go. We have the same experience sometimes when the intelligence is saying do something and the mind says, no, I really want to do it. Right? Like a spoiled child. I guess Sati was also a favorite of Daksha. She was kind of a spoiled child. She was more or less a princess, everything she wanted. But of course she was very noble and pious and accepted the role of a wife of Lord Shiva, who wasn't a very flamboyant or social person. So she was very intelligent, also very grave and intelligent in that sense. So the mind is also like, my mind is also like a spoiled child, right? Because we spoiled, the mind has been spoiled for millions and millions of births, it is said, the scripture, that we've been wandering around the universe for millions of births. Krishna says, they seated on this manorath, this chariot of the mind, the living entity is dragged all around the world, all around the universe, trying to fulfill his desires, simply being led by the, controlled by the sense objects. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's talking about the senses, and it says, and higher than the senses are the sense objects. I remember when I was a bhakta, we was questioning this, and I asked the DP, he said, no, it's a mistake. He said, the sense objects, they can't be higher than the senses. They're just inert things, they may be just inert things. But actually, later we found out it's a fact, because the senses come under control of the sense objects. Right? So the sense objects are more powerful than the senses. They actually attract the senses. So until one is, Krishna says one can actually give up the lower taste by experiencing higher taste. So that is and that can only be attained from the spiritual platform. What is higher taste than material taste? There's only two things, there's material and spiritual, or the negation of anything, the unconscious, more or less. Just existence. Liberation, mukti. Kevala mukti. So it means obviously spiritual life. By experiencing a higher taste, it's not a gradation of material sense gratification Krishna's talking about. He's talking about the happiness of the self, or the spiritual happiness, happiness of devotional service. Then you can actually desist the lower, from the lower taste without any difficulty, because you have no interest anymore, you have something better. Now Maya's interesting because she's offering us shelter and pleasure, and it's better than what we got, better than what we're feeling right now. Right? And this one is actually experiencing Krishna consciousness, or very strong in determination. And sometimes we see that the mind is pulling. It's very difficult to ignore that. Because there's taste we've experienced. We have experienced taste, we have experienced pleasure there, we have experienced shelter there. That experience was real. And it may be at this particular time better than, more appealing than what we have, what we're experiencing right now. So this is the intermediate struggle of the aspiring soul who is trying to become situated in the spiritual atmosphere. So that's from our own experience, that we know that sometimes even against all good intelligence, the mind is just adamant and does it anyway. Right? Spoiled. It's like a spoiled kid. And the mind just cannot control. The intelligence just cannot convince the mind that it's the wrong thing to do. The mind just won't accept it and do it anyway. And then there'll be a reaction. Material reaction. So like this, Lord Shiva was giving good advice to Sati. But that particular time she just couldn't accept it. So we should be diligent to accept what the authorities say, Lord Shiva is a Mahajan. We should accept what they say and really try to follow that. It's for, said as soon as you get back to Godhead, the better. Why delay? Why put it off? Even one moment or 1 hour or 1 day or one lifetime or, you know, why delay? So that's all we're doing. We're delaying the actual real bliss, the real, you know, natural life for some flickering so-called excitement in the material world. A little bit of attention, a little bit of relief, bit of pleasure. For that we're sacrificing we're delaying our progress to the spiritual world to be with Krishna. It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. But because we've forgotten what it's like to be with Krishna, then our determination is not so strong. But so that's why Krishna says you need a higher taste, then it's easy to give up then there'll be no interest in going through that for the lower taste. So therefore we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, in order to achieve the higher taste for which we're always anxious, Mahaprabhu says. Although he says, I don't desire this, I don't desire that, then we're anxious for this higher taste. Because once that taste is there, then more or less the material life is finished. At the stage of Ruchi, back to your material life is finished. until then, we have to accept all good advice, all good association, so that we can pass through this onslaught, ferocious onslaught of Durga with her 10 arms, hurling all kinds of nice things and nasty things at us. So we can pass through these and attain the grace of Krishna. Sum Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Tai Gopravanandi, Hari Hari Bol.